This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
Stay tuned for our bulletin of church news, which will be followed by Panorama, and then our feature, Justice and Peace. We shall close with the sports roundup. I am Johnny Baptist Tumusime. Pope Francis has written a preface to a book written by a German national, Matthias Kopp, whose title is The Christian Heritage in Iraq. The book is currently available in the German language. Matthias Kopp is a journalist by profession and a theologian. He is currently the spokesman of the German Catholic Bishops' Conference. In December last year, Pope Francis appointed him a consultant to the Dicastery for Communication. Lisa Zengarini has the details.
Matthias Kopp traces the 20 centuries-old history of Christianity in Iraq with a focus on the 2021 apostolic journey and on the Holy See's diplomacy in the region. In the preface, Pope Francis recalls the purpose of that historic visit, to express his closeness to Iraq's Christians, who, he writes, hold an abiding place in his heart, and to highlight the importance of interreligious dialogue for peace. According to Pope Francis, there are strong reasons to hope for a better future in Iraq, because he says it has an extraordinary potential which lies in all those people of goodwill committed to peace and sincere dialogue. In this context, his meeting with Grand Ayatollah al-Sistani in Najaf stands out as a powerful moment, as it was meant to be a message to the entire world that violence in the name of religion is an abuse of religion. The preface also highlights as another pivotal event of the visit the interfaith gathering in Ur, because it exemplified the potential for harmony among diverse communities and drew attention to the foundational role of Iraq in the spiritual history of humanity. Pope Francis notes that by exploring the rich heritage of Christianity in Iraq and documenting the diverse experiences of Christians and the engagement of the local church, COP not only honours Iraqi Christians, but also inspires a greater appreciation of their contribution to the country's cultural and spiritual identity. Concluding, Pope Francis reaffirms that the Christian presence in Iraq is vital for the nation's future. Despite ongoing challenges such as immigration and political instability, he expresses hope that Iraq can serve as a beacon of peaceful coexistence in the Middle East and beyond. I am Lisa Zengarini.
Pope Francis has accepted the resignation of Bishop Tarcisius Ngalale Kumutwa from the pastoral care of the Diocese of Iringa in Tanzania, who retires after reaching the age limit. The Holy Father has appointed Father Romanos Elamu Mihali as a new Bishop of Iringa. The bishop-elect is a priest of the Diocese of Mafinga in Tanzania. At the time of this appointment, Father Mihali was serving as Episcopal Vicar of the clergy of Mafinga and as parish priest of Ujewa. He was born in 1969 and ordained a priest in 2000 for the Diocese of Iringa. He was incarnated in the Diocese of Mafinga last year. A Kwamboni missionary, Sister Paula Moji, has called upon Catholics to embrace and engage the means of communication to spread the good news of the gospel. She was speaking at the weekend here in the Vatican at a conference organized by the Dicastery for Communication for religious women who are working in the field of communication. These religious, together with the other Catholic communicators, are in Rome for the Jubilee of Social Communicators. Sister Paula, a former lecturer at Tangaza College in Kenya and currently working in South Sudan, said communication is not a technique but a part of life, and that means that each person has a call to communicate. She expressed gratitude to the Dicastery for Communication for bringing together women religious involved in church communication from across the globe, pointing out that the conference was an enlightenment because of the variety of people who participated in it. The Catholic bishops of Lagos Ecclesiastical Province in Nigeria have issued a statement expressing concern about the habit of mixing pagan and Christian practices among young people in the country, warning that this has a negative impact on the Christian faith and values. The province includes Lagos Archdiocese and the dioceses of Abeokuta and Ijebu-Ode. The bishops note that many young people are being lured into money-making rituals and internet fraud activities backed by neo-pagan beliefs that give or offer false promises of wealth and protection, and express the urgent need by religious leaders and parents to take action to combat the trend by providing young people with a sound biblical and moral foundation. The bishops invite religious leaders and parents to engage the youth in a meaningful way, putting stress on listening to their concerns. The bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Goma in the Democratic Republic of Congo, the Right Reverend Willy Ngumbi Ngengere, has appealed to the fighting factions in the city of Goma to protect human life and not to destroy the city's essential infrastructure. Goma was captured by rebels of the M23 movement on Monday. The rebels are fighting to force the government in Kinshasa to respect the rights of ethnic Tutsi Congolese. Bishop Ngumbi, who was in Rome when Goma fell into rebel hands, said on Monday that he was horrified to learn from the faithful in Goma that schools and health facilities had been targeted by the combatants. He called upon the clergy, consecrated persons, the faithful, and all people of goodwill to provide the necessary assistance to anyone who has been affected by the fighting. You are tuned to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
Hospitals in Goma in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo are overwhelmed with patients with gunshot and shrapnel wounds, UN and other aid agencies said on Tuesday, a day after Rwandan-backed rebels marched into the city. The aid agencies also said dead bodies were scattered in the streets of the city of close to 2 million people. The M23 rebels entered Goma on Monday in a major escalation of a three-decade conflict. The Red Cross said that one of its hospitals had received over 100 patients within 24 hours with head wounds and chest trauma from mortars and shrapnel. At the weekend, the World Health Organization had counted between 600 and 700 wounded across hospitals in Goma. On Tuesday, protesters in the capital Kinshasa attacked a UN compound and embassies, including those of Rwanda, France, and the United States, expressing anger at what they said was foreign interference. Meanwhile, the International Contact Group for the Great Lakes, chaired by Germany, has called for an urgent de-escalation in the conflict. In a statement Tuesday, the ICG said that the sovereignty and territorial integrity of the DRC must be respected and urged both sides to respect a ceasefire agreed in August. The group also urged the leaders of the DRC and Rwanda to return to talks. On Monday, the new U.S. Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, held a telephone call with Democratic Republic of Congo President Felix Tshisekedi, in which he condemned the assault on Goma. Also on Monday, South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa held a telephone call with his Rwandan counterpart, Paul Kagame, to discuss the recent escalation in the violence. A South African presidency statement said the two heads of state agreed on the urgent need for a ceasefire and the resumption of peace talks by all parties to the conflict. In another development, four more South African soldiers have been killed in fighting with M23 rebels in the DRC, taking the number of South African peacekeepers killed there to 13 since the conflict escalated last week. South African troops are in Congo as part of UN and Southern African missions. Several African nations have made commitments to open up their electricity sectors to attract investors and light up homes of 300 million people currently lacking power in the next 6 years. Nigeria, Senegal, Zambia and Tanzania were among a dozen countries that made the commitment on Monday during an energy summit of African heads of state in Tanzania's commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. The countries committed to reform their electricity utility companies along with a push for renewable energy integration and raise national electricity connection targets. The authorities in South Sudan have lifted the temporary ban on Facebook and TikTok, which was imposed last week following the circulation of videos depicting the alleged killings of South Sudanese nationals in Sudan. The graphic images, which sparked violent protests and retaliatory killings across South Sudan, have been removed from the social media platforms, the National Communications Authority said on Monday. In a letter to telecoms and internet providers on Monday, the head of the authority, Napoleon Adok Guy, said the rise of violence linked to social media content in South Sudan underscores the need for a balanced approach that addresses the root causes of online incitement while protecting the rights of the population. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
And now, our feature, Justice and Peace. The Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith and the Dicastery for Culture and Education issued on Tuesday a joint document addressing the ethical and anthropological implications of artificial intelligence, highlighting distinctions between human and artificial intelligence, and offering guidelines meant to ensure that the development and use of artificial intelligence serve humanity and uphold human dignity. The document has a Latin title, Antiqua et Nova, which is translated in English as Old and New. Its subtitle is Note on the Relationship Between Artificial Intelligence and Human Intelligence. Human intelligence refers to the general, natural, God-given mental ability in us human beings to reason, solve problems, to learn, and to relate with one another. Artificial intelligence, on the other hand, refers to a set of technologies that enable computers to perform a variety of advanced functions normally requiring human intelligence, such as the ability to understand and translate spoken and written language, analyze data, make recommendations, and so on. Bishop Paul Tai is the Secretary of the Dicastery for Culture and Education. In this first part of his interview, he speaks to Devin Watkins on what the document is about and why it has come out at this particular time.
This document is a kind of bringing together of a lot of reflections that have been developing organically over the last number of years. Artificial intelligence, AI, has been on the agenda for about 10 years, let's say. It's been around for longer and it's been discussed for longer, but it's kind of hit public consciousness over the last 10 years and very particular in the last year or so with the emergence of ChatGPT, which put AI tools in the hands of ordinary users. So what we're trying to do at the moment is to bring together the reflections that have been emerging from the church, from various church organizations here at the Vatican. We have messages for World Day of Peace, message for the World Day of Communications. The Academy for Life has been working on this issue with the Rome Call. The Academy for the Sciences have been convening scientists to talk about AI. We've been dealing with the question of education and AI. And there's an idea to bring it together and bring something synthetic that unites all the different perspectives that have been emerging organically and maybe put them in the one place. This is something we're going to be living with that's going to be emerging. But what it is trying to do is to offer people some perspectives from which they can begin to think critically about AI and its potential benefits for society, and then to alert people somewhat to what we need to think about to ensure that we don't inadvertently create something or allow something to be created that could be damaging to humanity and to society. I say there's a certain cautionary element here. Many of us at the beginning, with the beginning of social media, were very quick to embrace its extraordinary potential. We didn't necessarily see the side effects that emerge in terms of polarization, fake news and other issues. And I think that's, again, here, we want to welcome something that has great potential for human beings, want to see that potential, and at the same time be attentive to the possible downsides. The document focuses on a number of things. There's the headline issues that everybody has thought about and that's out there, issues about the future of work, about war, about deep fakes, about inequality. And they're ethical issues and societal issues that we look at. But in addressing those, we're also trying to focus back something more on a more basic question about what it means to be human. So the anthropological issue, what it means to be human, what is it that gives human life value, purpose and meaning? We recognize that AI systems can enhance and augment certain parts of our humanity, that is our ability to reason, to process, to discern, to discover, to see patterns, to make innovations. It can certainly enhance that. But we also want to say that that type of intelligence is not the only type of intelligence, that there's a broader understanding of intelligence, which is about our human capacity to find purpose and meaning in life. Many of the people working in AI are very clear that they want to put AI at the service of human good, that they want to have person-centered AI, they want AI for humanity. All these titles are there. But part of the question we have to ask is, what is it that is good for humanity? What is it that promotes human well-being? And that is a form of intelligence which machines can't really replace.
AI development is evolving at a rapid pace. So why has the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith and the Dicastery for Culture and Education decided to release this document at this moment?
The Vatican has been attentive to the Holy See, and not just the Holy See, but the Catholic Church broadly, also many Catholic universities, have been leading reflection on AI and its importance. And probably, if we're honest, it's the increased public attention to AI in the last year and a half, with, as I say, the advent of ChatGPT. And there are other models of easily used systems of artificial intelligence that have given an urgency to it. Certainly from our perspective within the world of education, all educators are asking questions about the potential for AI to help in education and the risks if it somehow depersonalizes the nature of education. So that was one thing that we're responding to questions. We're responding also to an ad limina visits with bishops wanting some points or some orientation. So this document comes about, in a sense, drawing together lots of other initiatives and putting them together, but also giving it that kind of unity, and a unity of a vision which tries to unite the ethical issues and relate them to that more fundamental anthropological vision of what it is that makes us human. It was interesting that the United Nations have been trying to work on overall systems for the governance of AI. And one of the questions that emerged there, they said at one stage, they said, look, these are obviously questions that raise questions about the future of humanity. But really, we can't do that because there are too many different views about it. Or UNESCO said that AI is, and this was the one that struck me very strongly, said is leading to what they call an anthropological disruption. Silicon Valley loves the language of disruption, of breaking down to reinvent. But what's it here? When we're talking about the nature of what it is to be human and what it is that makes human life satisfactory, it becomes very important that we reflect critically on that and that we don't bypass that question about the ultimate meaning of life. And that's where I think particularly issues that emerge strongly in this document are ones about the risk of increased inequality with AI. You can see that generally in terms of the distribution of what has happened. Digitalization has led to an increase of a very small number of extraordinarily wealthy people who have extraordinary amounts of power for which they are not necessarily accountable to other institutions. So how do we think about making sure that this doesn't serve to fracture the unity of the human family, which is economic unity, but it's also access to power and information? I mean, one of the areas where there is extraordinary potential for AI is in the area of healthcare. But we know that healthcare tends to be already not very fairly distributed. Will this lead to further inequalities in that area? So a lot of our reflection and the timing of this is that we need to have something there to address the debate. This is not the final word. It can't be the final word because this is an emerging area. But it's also trying to make sure that we're putting down some markers, some points from which people who are interested engaging with the debate get points that they may be able to grasp and work with. So it's written for the church, it's written for Catholic institutions, but it's also for all people to offer them to say, this is something that is going to have a huge impact on the future of humanity. Let's think about it. Let's add our voices to it. And let's not feel that because technologically it's quite complicated that we somehow hand over a competence for the bigger questions which are about our future as human beings.
Bishop Paul Tai, the Secretary of the Dicastery for Culture and Education, speaking there to Devin Watkins. And that was Justice and Peace for this week.
This is a sports roundup and welcome to the program. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. The day an elephant is killed, all talk is about that elephant. So goes the adage in some African cultures. Our elephant today is the draw for the Africa Cup of Nations Morocco 2025, on which a larger part of this program shall be focused. The fact is that the final draw for the Total Energies Confederation of African Football CAF Africa Cup of Nations Morocco 2025 was concluded on Monday 27th January in Morocco. The star-studded special ceremony took place at the Mohammed V National Theatre in the Moroccan city of Rabat, giving the 24 qualified teams their path to the trophy. The teams were drawn into six groups, each containing four sides, ahead of the 21st December 2025 to 18th January 2026 finals tournament that will be spread across six host cities and nine stadia in Morocco. As Africa's best chest, the continent's most coveted trophy. Hosts Morocco was drawn in Group A and would take on Mali, Zambia and Comoros. Record seven-time winners Egypt face a trio of Southern African teams in Group B in the form of last year's bronze medalist South Africa, Angola and Zimbabwe. In Group C, Nigeria will lock horns with Tunisia and the East African duo of Uganda and Tanzania. The 2021 champions Senegal go up against Democratic Republic of Congo, Benin and Botswana in Group D. Algeria, who were the winners in 2019, take on Burkina Faso, Equatorial Guinea and Sudan in what most experts say is an interesting Group E. And defending champions Cote d'Ivoire face old rivals and five-time winners Cameroon, Gabon and Mozambique in Group F as they look to claim back-to-back titles. The top two teams in each pool will advance to the round of 16 along with the four best third-placed sides. The draw, which was broadcast in over 90 countries worldwide, was conducted with the assistance of African legends Serge Aurier, Aliou Cheze, Joseph Yobo and Mustafa Haji. And as can be seen, the tournament features a blend of perennial powerhouses, rising stars and debutants who together produce intriguing groups for the continent's greatest show. The draw shows the diversity of teams that promise a competition filled with contrasting styles and narratives. Host nation Morocco, which is returning to host the AFCON for the first time since 1998, will look to capitalize on their home advantage. The Atlas Lions are riding high on their historic 2022 FIFA World Cup semi-final run and among the favorites. Defending champions Cote d'Ivoire are also eyeing back-to-back triumphs after lifting the trophy on home soil just 1 year ago. Senegal, the 2021 winners led by coach Pape Thiaw, are equally determined to make history. Meanwhile, underdogs like Botswana, who are returning to the AFCON for only the second time since 2012, and Comoros bring a unique edge to the tournament and are looking to replicate their surprise 2021 campaign. The record champions Egypt, spearheaded by stars like Mohamed Salah and Omar Mamouche, remain a formidable force, but teams like Mali and Burkina Faso, often labeled as dark horses, could upset the traditional order with their talented squads. In any case, the draw is more than just a formal procedure because it marks the symbolic beginning of Africa's premier football competition. Meantime, the Confederation of African Football, together with the Royal Moroccan Football Federation and the local organizing committee of the Total Energies Confederation of African Football Africa Cup of Nations Morocco 2025, have announced the cities that will host matches in the competition. Six cities and nine stadiums have been selected for Africa's flagship football tournament. The cities are Rabat, Casablanca, Agadir, Marrakech, Fez, and Tangier. Angola has caught up 42 athletes to join the pre-selected team for the African Athletics Championship to be held from April 29th to May 4th in Casablanca in Morocco. The move aims at trying to defend the 2024 gold medal and winning other medals. The 42 athletes, both in the male and female categories, were presented recently in Luanda, where they will undergo medical and physical examinations until February. And from Kenya comes the news that world marathon record holder Ruth Chepngetich and women's only world record holder Peres Jepchirchir are among elite athletes who will be in contention in this year's London Marathon on April 21st. Chepngetich will be competing in her first marathon since smashing the world record in October last year, clocking 2 hours, 9 minutes and 56 seconds to win the Chicago Marathon for the third time. She consequently made history as the first female runner to clock a sub 2 hours and 10 minutes in the 42-kilometer race. And on that note, we come to the end of today's edition of our Sports Roundup. Until next week, at the same time, my name is Kanyan Tagodifri Kampamba.
You have been listening to the English Africa service of Vatican Radio, and I am Johnny Baptist Tumusime. In our next program, at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature Health and Healing and our segment on the ongoing Holy Year 2025. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus. With Jesus in your life.